Okay, thanks so much for having me. I was here 2 years ago, for those of you who were here in 2016, talking about the same project. So I'm here again to do some updates on what we've been up to in the last 2 years. My co-authors are Barry Berjikian. He and I are both out of the Manchester Research Lab with the Northwest Fisheries Science Center. And then Steve Jeffries talked before lunch, a marine mammal biologist with WDFW. And he and his crew did all of the harbor seal work that I'm going to talk about today. So quantifying steelhead smolt survival in Puget Sound started for our group in 2006. We started using acoustic telemetry to monitor steelhead survival in Puget Sound, along with a number of other researchers that were doing the same thing at the same time. So over the time period of 2006 to 2002, the UW, Nisqually Indian Tribe, Puyallup Tribe, Seattle City Light, WDFW, there's a number of other groups who are all using acoustic telemetry to estimate survival of steelhead during this time frame. So luckily we were able to put this data set together and do somewhat of a meta-analysis to look at the overall Puget Sound trends between populations. So as part of this work, we have some receiver arrays. You can see that these yellow hydrophones, those are the floats around the hydrophones. We have a number of arrays that are moored semi-permanently on the seafloor. And today I'm going to talk about especially this Narrows line, it's abbreviated NAR, and the Central Puget Sound Receiver Array, CPS, and Admiralty Inlet is ADM, and then this final line up here at the Strait of Juan de Fuca. The acronym is the JDF line, so that'll be in some of the figures that I'll show. So as part of this meta-analysis, we put all the data together and saw that one of the most striking trends, of course, was that the steelhead survival in Puget Sound was fairly low and much lower than we had anticipated. Another trend is that the trend seemed to be going downward. So this looked like a very common trend throughout Puget Sound. And the other thing that we found was that the migration was really rapid. So the steelhead were only taking about 2 weeks to get through Puget Sound. And so considering this, that the steelhead were experiencing such a high amount of mortality in such a short amount of time, we started this experiment in 2014 to look at the most likely predator on steelhead and started using seals actually as the receiver. So to start to look at the habitat overlap and interactions between these two species, Steve and his crew actually caught 12 seals in Puget Sound. So there was 6 at Orchard Rocks that they caught. That's in central Puget Sound. And then 6 in northern Puget Sound, where they caught these seals and glued these instrument packs to their backs. So each instrument pack contained a Vemco hydrophone, so it's like a mini hydrophone that was capable of detecting the steelhead tags that we implanted in Nisqually and Green River smolts. It also included a GPS tag that was logging the location of each animal as throughout the deployment. And then a VHF transmitter so that Steve's crew could locate the backpacks after that animal had molted and released the pack so that we could get the data back. So we kind of started this experiment as just kind of an exploratory thing to look at interactions. We ended up finding quite a bit of evidence of predation of harbor seals on steelhead in Puget Sound, much more than we thought we would. First of all, we saw these stationary steelhead tags that were detected by seals at their haulout. So the red circles in this figure are showing the numbers of stationary tags that we saw at the Orchard Rocks and Blakely Rocks haulout and that North Puget Sound haulout. And these numbers don't look very high, but considering the low numbers of steelhead that we tagged and the low numbers of the low proportion of seals that we tagged, we felt that this was a pretty substantial amount of predation. And in addition to the stationary tags, we found tag detection patterns that were consistent with harbor seal movements in Puget Sound. So we didn't actually have any seals that we tagged that ate any of the tagged steelhead, but we did have harbor seals that were tagged that detected tags in the bellies of their other individuals that they were hauled out with. So there's evidence that these harbor seals were eating the tags and bringing them back to the haul out where they got detected. So that was in addition to the stationary tags that we found at the haul out. And we also saw that a higher proportion of stationary tags and total steelhead detected or seal detected tags in central Puget Sound where mortality was the greatest. So with our mark recapture models, we were able to divide the migration segment through Puget Sound up into different segments, and so we were able to tie that high mortality area to the area where we saw the most seal predation, and I'll show a figure on that in a minute also. So considering that we didn't necessarily have a explicit plan for estimated predation rate in 2014 when we did the first seal tagging, we decided to do the tagging again in 2016 to try to get better coverage of the entire migration of Nisqually steelhead. So in addition to seals that we tagged in central and north Puget Sound in 2016, we added some seals in south Puget Sound. So we had 8 seals down there, and we used a similar approach as we did in 2014. And so I'm just going to jump right into... So what happened in 2016, we were expecting to have a replicate of 2014, but the steelhead survival ended up going through the roof. we had much greater survival in 2016 than we had ever seen in any of the other populations that we monitored, especially the Nisqually, which typically has a really low survival rate. So what we ended up was we had data from interactions with seals and steelhead in a very low survival year, which was 2014, compared to harbor seal and steelhead interactions in a very high survival year. So it was kind of more of a comparison rather than a replication of this experiment. So hopefully you can see what's going on here. I know it's kind of small, but the orange stars are stationary tags, and all these dots are showing the GPS location of the tagged animals, of the tagged seals that we had out. And so you can see in 2014, we don't have the same coverage of South Sound. We have much greater coverage of seals roaming around and looking for steelhead tags, and so we can't necessarily compare the survival rates from the mark recapture models between years in South Puget Sound, but we did have really similar survival rates anyway. But what we see in Central Puget Sound is this really big difference in steelhead survival that correlates with the high evidence of predation in 2014. And it's the same pattern in North Puget Sound, where we have really high survival of steelhead going through that area where we have low evidence of harbor seal predation. So basically what this data suggests is that we have this high amount of this shift in predation pressure that seems to correlate with steelhead survival. And I just put this slide up because I just wanted to point out that in addition to the increase in survival that we saw in Nisqually steelhead, we also saw increases in survival for 2 populations in Hood Canal. So this might not be just a Nisqually phenomenon with this higher survival. It looks to be more of a Puget Sound-wide shift in survival and increase in recent years. So of course, you know, we have to ask ourselves what's happened with this shift. Why is survival so high, and how and why has predation shifted so much? So 2 main possibilities are that perhaps the steelhead smolt behavior changed, leaving them in a less vulnerable state than they were in 2014. The other possibility, of course, is that predator behavior or predation pressure has changed either through predator numbers or through changes in predator behavior. And I feel like this next part of my talk has been set up really well by Steve and by Dave. It's already been introduced, but first of all, we don't have a lot of evidence that smolt behavior has changed. So with acoustic telemetry, we are able to compare the travel time for all the years that we have data for. And as you can see, especially for 2014 and 2016, you see almost identical migration behavior as far as the smolts moving through these receiver arrays that we had out in both years. So there's not a lot of evidence for that. There is, however, some indication that there might be changes in predation pressure, and it could be that there is a change in the amount of transient orca. As Steve was talking about, they've been coming into Puget Sound a lot more often, and this is data from the Whale Museum, so it's citizen observations, and we're still kind of grappling with how we can use this data, but it looks like, as far as trends go, there's been an increased trend in the years of high survival, of steelhead high survival, with increased occurrence of killer whales, with the idea that these killer whales may be changing the behavior of the harbor seals, or possibly, I heard Steve say that they may even be decreasing the numbers substantially. The other possibility is this alternate prey hypothesis, and Dave talked about this as well, and probably a lot of you have noticed, being out there in South Sound, that we have had this boom in anchovy abundance over the last 2 or 3 years, and that also corresponds with the increase in steelhead survival. If anybody wants to know anything about anchovy population dynamics, you should read this paper. It's Will Duguid and a bunch of other researchers from Puget Sound and Strait of Georgia, the Salish Sea ecosystem. He's put together a number of different data sets, basically all the data he could find on historical and more recent abundance of anchovy in the Salish Sea. So what you can see is that, most of these recent data sets agree that we've had this very marked increase in anchovies. And Corey Green shared his Skagit Bay tonet survey data with us, which captures mostly post-larval anchovies. And what you can see, this is like an amazing relationship for ecological data. First, the one on the left is just anchovies and steelhead mortality rate. So it's mortality instead of survival here, but you can see that in high probability of presence of anchovies, then you have lower mortality of steelhead. And the relationship is even better when you lag it by a year, so indicating that once the anchovies have a year to grow out, then the presence of these larger anchovies are possibly buffering the predation on steelhead so that the marine mammals or whatever is eating those steelhead as they migrate through have an alternate prey source. So that's what we're thinking. And then I don't have any slides on hake, but it was interesting to hear from Dave that there was a much larger abundance of hake, which may be having the same effect in 2016. And just to take it one step further, anchovy abundance, I think there was a question about this. So over this time period that we're looking at, it seems to be related to average Puget Sound temperature. So in those high survival, blob temperature years, you have much better recruitment or, at least better catches of anchovies in the Skagit Bay area. And again, I'm going to refer everybody to this paper that talks a lot about those dynamics where it looks like, in more recent years, temperature may be influencing anchovy abundance, but that's not necessarily the whole story because there are increases in anchovy abundances where we don't see, or increases in temperature where we don't see anchovies and then vice versa. So I think there's more to that story. Just in summary, we saw significant changes in early marine survival of steelhead that were we've been trying to reconcile with ecological data and biological data. There's evidence for predation by harbor seals in Puget Sound that is inversely related to marine survival rates. And smolt behavior is similar among years, so we don't think that that's what's causing the difference in predation pressure. And then this variation in survival appears to be associated with increased transient killer whale activity and anchovy pulses, and possibly... Oh, and then the other thing I wanted to say on record is that if this relationship continues, so we did tag in 2018. So if this relationship continues, then we're predicting that the survival of steelhead is going to go down, just given that the temperature of Puget Sound is starting to go down. So hopefully I'll have that data soon and maybe can report in 2 years. So thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Great talk there. I sort of wonder if you see improved survival in Puget Sound in certain years, if you can track that back to adult survival in the sense that you might, so fish who were destined to die in Puget Sound and maybe escape that mortality in Puget Sound may have maybe a delayed mortality, so they're still destined, maybe they were less fit. And their ultimate survival as adults maybe won't be revealed. Does that make sense? So maybe you'll just have delayed mortality. So they escaped the mortality that was in Puget Sound, and you may not see the benefit in the adult returns.
Okay.
Have you had a chance to, track that back at all to actual, smolt to adult returns?
Yeah. I mean, so the Nisqually does have estimates. I think you're involved with those.
Yeah, I sort of was thinking that might be like the next slide. I'm not being critical. I was sort of curious of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we should look into that. I mean, one thing that we have definitely been paying attention to is the marine survival rate and then how that relates to 2 years down the line. So how important is the early marine survival rate in predicting the return 2 years later? And it does seem like it has, the returns. I've just kind of informally tracked the returns, and it seems like they have been greater in the past couple of years where we've had higher marine or early marine survival. I don't know what your take on that is, but
yeah, I haven't put all the pieces together, but I'm curious now for sure. So yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the next like formal analysis that we should look into.
Cool, thanks.
Thank you. Okay.